Iku Iluna, please rise. Ohea oko eko ka aha, inahe, kuleana imua okea, aha ho o kolo kolo ki ike hanahano okumoku aina o hoai. Inaui mai, imalio mai, ilohi ia kaleo. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye, all persons having any business before this honorable Supreme Court State of Hawaii, draw nigh. Give your attention and shall be heard. Inoho ilalo, please be seated.
Please call the case.
Case number SCPW-17-0000927, Nick Gruby, petitioner versus the Honorable Rahm A. Trader, judge of the Circuit Court of the First Circuit, State of Hawaii, respondent judge, and State of Hawaii, Alan Ahn and Tiffany Masunaga, respondents, and case number 21908, State of Hawaii, plaintiff appellee versus Jerome Rogan, defendant appellant. Arguing for amicus curiae, the Office of the Public Defender, Sarah Haley. Arguing for amicus curiae, Attorney General of the State of Hawaii, Thomas Hughes. Arguing for petitioner Nick Ruby, Robert Brian Black. Argument on the merits.
All right, good afternoon, aloha everyone. Our proceeding today is being broadcast live on our Judiciary YouTube channel as well as on Olelo. I'd like to welcome our Substitute Justice, Judge Matt Viola. Judge Viola, welcome to the court. Counselor, are you all ready to proceed today? All right. We've allocated 30 minutes for each side. Ms. Haley, 15 minutes. Mr. Hughes, 12 minutes with 3 minutes reserve for rebuttal. Mr. Black, 30 minutes. We'll give you a warning with 5 minutes to go. And on behalf of the court, I want to thank our amicus curiae for helping us with this case today with your insights. Please proceed.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. Records of criminal cases, even for non-convictions, impact employment, housing, and education. Automatic criminal record clearance, including expungement and sealing, democratizes the tools available for people to move forward with their lives and make a positive impact on society. Across the country, states have been passing and expanding laws to allow expungement and sealing of criminal history records. Hawaii is no different. This court asked for briefing on three issues related to Hawaii's expungement and sealing statute. The first issue is whether sealing the entire case file violates the public's right to access under the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution and Article 1, Section 4 of the Hawaii Constitution. It does not. The public has no qualified right of access to these case files. To determine whether there is such a right, we apply the logic and experience test to these types of documents, which are files enclosed and for Anna Rogan non-conviction cases after expungement. The experience prong looks at whether the place and process have been historically open to the public. The experience prong supports finding no right of access. It is unclear how much access the public historically had to these types of documents. Certainly, there is not an established and widespread tradition across the states of access to these documents. Judiciaries across the nation could and did destroy documents and close cases. And finally, we must take into account that technology has fundamentally changed. The nature of public access, making it easier to access and potentially exploit this information, an issue that did not arise historically. The logic prong looks at whether public access plays a significant positive role in how the particular process functions. The logic prong supports finding no right of access.
Well, let's say an ethically challenged prosecutor who's married to a police chief dismisses cases involving friends and powerful figures. The records of those proceedings are gone forever?
So after expungement, they do have to be mandatorily sealed. However, those records are open to the public and media, and they can download those online prior to it being sealed.
I thought your position was that nothing short of total sealing aligns with 830.1.3.2F.
So first, I'll just note that sealing would happen after the active case was done. So they would have access to those files prior to this sealing statute coming into play. And our position is that, yes, it does need to be sealed. Sealing does include the records in the courthouse as well. And the statute does say, or otherwise remove. And that would provide a little bit more, I guess, room for the judiciary when it comes to the website of how they want to.
Okay, but yeah. I thought your position, as well as the Attorney General's position, was unequivocally, it's sealed. I mean, it's automatic sealing, that you weren't splicing and dicing the or otherwise removed from the electronic database.
So I'll put it this way. It asks if there is any other remedies. I did not see any other remedies or alternatives, and certainly Groobies do not comply with the statute. So removing the name off of and disassociating that would not comply with the statute. No other alternatives that were provided by Groobie would fall under or otherwise remove and be satisfactory to the statute.
Okay, so wait, getting back to my hypothetical, and I'll throw out another one. You know, 661B, the wrongful convictions and actually innocent finding. Is it your position then with automatic sealing that those would not be discoverable? Or what I may be hearing you saying is that things can be narrowly tailored where the public can have access to years-long Dana Ireland case.
So I want to be clear. No, they'll need to be sealed and the public cannot have access to those. But I would note that prior to the expungement and then the automatic sealing, that the public would have access to all those documents, as we know for...
Okay, but are you suggesting that our case law says that the right to public access only applies to ongoing cases? Doesn't it say that there is the public right to access judicial records after a proceeding has ended?
So those prior cases on and Groobie, the first Groobie, did broadly discuss court records. However, they did not take into account this separate, distinct subset of cases, which would be after expungement, that are terminated cases. There is going to be a period of time. It can be relatively short, but after which they would apply for expungement and then have the automatic sealing. So those prior cases did not specifically look at that. And I would point to...
Are the actual innocent cases, they seem to be among the most concerning cases in the criminal justice system where somebody is wrongfully convicted by whatever. Maybe it's prosecutorial misconduct, maybe it's a false confession, maybe it's just the person was, you know, the jury found him guilty or her guilty and shouldn't have happened. Those cases under your position would be forever closed from scrutiny, wouldn't they?
I wouldn't put it as forever closed from scrutiny. I would say that the judicial records would be sealed. However, the media, and you gave a great example of a case, would have already covered those extensively. And I would also note that especially a defendant who was wrongly convicted should have the opportunity to have a second chance at life.
So the public's right to access is contingent upon the scope of media coverage?
It is not contingent on that. However, that does mitigate some of the concerns of the public policy issue of that these types of cases that have, you know, dirty cops, you know, prosecutors that aren't acting right, a judge that's not acting right, those are going to be covered, more likely to be covered by the media. So it does mitigate that concern.
Ms. Haley, you know, the statute talks about removing all judiciary files and other information pertaining to the applicable arrest or case from the publicly accessible electronic database of the judiciary. And It seems that you're arguing that the case record has to be completely sealed, including the paper record in the courthouse. Isn't there an intermediate position where the information could be taken down from the website, but still available in the paper record at the courthouse for access by the public or the media?
And I will say this is a closer call, but our reading of the statute is that it says shall seal or otherwise remove from the judiciary's publicly accessible electronic databases. So our position is that sealing, and that's again a legal term, you know, anyone that practices would understand what sealing means, that would include the paper documents that are available at the court as well. And that's particularly important because while it is easier to access things online, an employer or someone else who wants information could go down and access those records at the courthouse.
You know, we're dealing with the current statute, but the statute does then change next month. And you've been talking about when a person requests. Here we have the defendants requesting that the files be sealed and are removed. But from next month, it says it's automatic. Is that right? The court is required to?
It's automatic. However, my understanding is that the expungement process, you would still do an application for. So the defendant is still having the option of whether they want to go through expungement. But then once it's expunged, then it goes to sealing. So let's say a defendant did
not want.
So
we receive a notification from the Attorney General's office, and then the judiciary would be required to seal everything.
Correct.
Even if for some reason the defendant wanted expungement of the arrest records, but didn't really want everything gone.
Yes, that is how the statute is written.
As a practical matter, in this case, what are we supposed to do about the published opinions?
So what is on the electronic database, you could basically do what you do, for example, for juvenile cases, which you could have it sealed so that no one can view it on the electronic database.
Even though there have been hundreds of citations to these cases?
So, yes, the opinion is still published. You can't claw it back from Westlaw or wherever else it has been out. However, it would not be easily accessible by going on the court's electronic database or, under our reading, the going down to the courthouse itself.
So basically, if there were expungement requests, this would apply retroactively. We would be required to go through and basically delete all of those names from our electronic. We have our opinions and orders filed in on our website, but that's what you're saying would be required.
So, yes, our position would be both the, you know, eCourt Kakua, but also the database that's on the judiciary's website of prior opinions.
I've wondered what this would mean for public access and or the right of the press under Article 1, Section 4, with respect to, like, you know, I've been to so many, like, reenactments of, like, the Massey trial. Mm-hmm. And they cite to what was said in court and what the judge said and what happened. You know, that was a mistrial. I'm at the trial of the five local men. So those types of records would be erased forever. If there was a mistrial or if someone was found not guilty, the record of what happened would be lost for posterity. So the media, the press, legal scholars would not know what happened.
Well, yes, it is sealed. However, that doesn't mean that those documents couldn't have been downloaded while the case was active. So especially for a case that's getting a lot of media attention or the general public has an interest in, those cases, again, it's very easy to cover.
The Massey reenactments were really done by Judge Danny Chin of the Second Circuit in the last couple of decades.
And this goes
so
just to
decades later, nobody could access it.
So decades later, no one can access the judicial records. Now, that doesn't mean that no one can talk about a case or you can't say anything, but what the statute says is that the
records are... We wouldn't know what happened. The transcripts are gone. We wouldn't know what motions were filed. We wouldn't know what the judge's rulings were on the various motions.
That's correct. And that, you know, that is something that has to be weighed, but there is a strong benefit to having this record clearance for people to move
on. Or even Korematsu, right?
So
the Korematsu decision, we wouldn't be able to go back and see how he was treated at the original trial, what happened, right? Because he was later, the writ of coram nobis was granted, his conviction was set aside, so that would be lost for posterity.
It would not be available on the judiciary's website or under the judiciary records in the courthouse. However, you're
arguing that people should have been downloading that at that time.
That they should not have?
Should have been, because during that time there was no internet. They wouldn't have been able to download all the files, right? But when did the records start? I mean, we really, for some courts, it's only been within the last couple years that we've had electronic records, right?
Well, it was still available for people to come in person, to go down to the courthouse to access those records.
You're now conceding that we can keep a paper copy?
No. While the case was active.
While the case was active, but not if you're a legal scholar or someone that is a historian that is interested in what happened in that court proceeding decades later.
That's true. However, I would note that, and... Gruby did cite to several historical databases about court records that have been kept. So other places can keep these records.
Sometimes we don't know the historical importance of a case while it's going on.
But again, I understand that there's certainly downsides, and that's part of the reason I'm sure we're having oral argument today. However, I would again emphasize how important it is to people to have a second chance. And for these people, they're not
really worried about is people... Employers, landlords, you said employment, housing, mm-hmm. and what else did you say?
Education. Yeah. But it's particularly employment if you look at, like, I included a few academic studies, but employment is, of course, there's other things as well, but employment is a big thing. Housing as well, as you know,
what would the judiciary keeping a paper record without it being available electronically, what would you say to that?
Well, an employer could still come down and look at a paper record, and it could still affect them moving forward. A landlord, it's very hard to find rental properties here. They could go down and check on a paper record. So any barrier we can create to people basically discriminating against defendants, and in these cases have non-convictions moving forward, and they can be productive members of society as well.
I'd like to address the separation of powers issue here.
Okay, and I noticed...
In terms of the judiciary's prerogative over its own records, you know, what if we said the constitutional right of privacy requires that the executive branch delete all of these documents within the executive branch?
So, and I know it's my light command, so I'll just answer mm-hmm. this question. So briefly, as the separation of powers, our argument is that this is a substantive law rather than a procedural. You know, again, as to how the judiciary wants to specifically, you know, seal the records on the website, I think there's some room there with procedural and how quickly you do it and exactly what shows up on eCourt Kukua. However, the substantive law is clear, which is that the legislature wants people to have a second chance, and that's what this statute does.
All right. Thank you for your argument, Ms. Haley. Mr. Hughes.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, Associate Justices, and may it please the Court. Amici's plain language reading of subsection F is the correct one, and the statute is constitutional as written. Mr. Gruby's alternative reading of subsection F is implausible, and he has failed to show beyond a reasonable doubt that Amici's interpretation leads to a plain, clear, manifest, and unmistakable constitutional violation. First, the statute. Subsection F requires courts to seal or otherwise remove files and information from the judiciary's databases. But Mr. Gruby asked the court to read the option of sealing out of the statute and to interpret remove files to mean leave the files where they are. Second, the right of access. Multiple state Supreme Courts have held that there is no constitutional right to access the records of closed cases.
Mr. Hughes, I'm going to ask you to go back to the interpretation of the statute. And to the CJ's point earlier, a question, which is, why can't that statute seems to be able to be read in a way that it only addresses taking off information, expunging records from the electronic databases. And when you read it in conjunction with the statute, which is going to go into effect on July 1, we're talking about a couple of weeks, which starts with shall seal or otherwise remove from the judiciary's publicly accessible electronic databases. I mean, that seems to further confirm the legislature was intending to speak to that database, not documents held in a court clerk's office in courthouses. How do you address that?
I think that's correct, Justice Ginoza. And so we may differ slightly with the Office of the Public Defender on this point, but our position is that the statute only applies to files that are in the judiciary's electronic publicly accessible databases. So it wouldn't have any effect on paper records that are kept at courts.
So taking down those electronic databases is consistent with the legislature's concern protecting defendants who are acquitted or for whatever reason not convicted from the concerns that Ms. Haley was addressing.
Yeah, I think, you know, when the legislature legislates, it doesn't always take the most maximal position. There's not a lot of legislative history explaining exactly why they made this choice, but it appears from the language of the statute that what they were concerned about were electronic records, presumably because those are easier to access.
Right. I mean, anyone sitting at a computer somewhere can punch in somebody's name and pull up something on a database. So reading the statute in the way that the AG's office does, would we have to reach constitutional issues?
I'm not sure the answer to the question of whether you have to reach constitutional issues.
Would Article 1, Section 4 issues be implicated based on the way that you are interpreting the statute?
So we don't think that there's any constitutional issue with the statute as written and as we interpret it.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll turn to that point more broadly and talk a bit about the experience and logic test. I think it's important to be clear about what we're looking for. So in terms of experience, when courts have described the history of public access to trials and other in-person court proceedings, they've used terms like an unbroken, uncontradicted history. That's from Richmond newspapers. A uniform rule of openness. That's from Globe newspaper. A near uniform practice. That's from Press Enterprise 2. And what they found is that public trials meet that very high standard. There really is a tradition dating back over 1,000 years to pre-Norman conquest England of the public being able to attend trials. And, you know, all the way through the colonial era of the United States, and as this court noted and on, you know, starting in the 1820s in Hawaii when the first kind of Western-style trials were being held. But public access to the records of closed cases does not meet this same standard. The public has never had uniform and uncontradicted access to the records of closed cases. Rather, they've only had access to the limited set of records that the government has chosen to make available. You know, we talk about in our brief the statute HRS 94.3. That was in effect from before statehood to 1984, and it allowed the state controller to essentially decide whether or not any public records of closed cases would be kept, archived somewhere, converted into a different form, or just entirely destroyed. And given that that's our tradition, our history.
What years did you say?
So that statute, it was actually first enacted in 1945. And when the changeover to the HRS, it was numbered HRS section 94.3. That's still the general statute that controls government records. But in 1984, the legislature carved out the judiciary, enacted HRS section 602.5.5, and allowed the judiciary to make the decision about what records would be available. However, I think that even that statute shows there's still no public tradition of access, because the judiciary from 1984 to the present could decide at any time to get rid of any records of closed cases for essentially any reason. And so I think that shows you there's not a public tradition of access, because the access is available, yes, to whatever.
Does the record indicate that the judiciary did that? Did the judiciary destroy records?
I mean, we cited to a case where they talked about records being destroyed. I don't think there's any authority that shows exactly what the fate of, you know, every single trial court case from 1959 to the present, what the outcome has been. I would actually submit that Mr. Bruby, as the person challenging the statute, had the burden to put forward the evidence to prove his historical claim, since the statute has the presumption of constitutionality and he's the one challenging it. But just the existence of that statute, I think, is fairly clear evidence. And, you know, if you look at what Mr. Bruby...
Well, you know, isn't it also clear evidence that the judiciary is the one who controls judicial records, and that that constitutional function, and it's also statutory function, should not be delegated to the Attorney General and depend on their, you know, typing up an expungement order? How is that not encroaching on the judiciary's independence and power and authority to administer its own records?
So I would disagree with you that there's a constitutional dimension to the judiciary's power over its records. Clearly, yes, there is the statute, 602-5.5. But, you know, first of all, there were 25 years of experience under the Hawaii Constitution where it was an executive branch decision official who was making those decisions. And then, you know, even under the current statute, you know, the court has previously described that statute in one of the few cases that's mentioned it as having delegated a power, not recognizing some inherent constitutional authority. I would also point out that, you know...
Well, but the power is in the rulemaking, and the judiciary has established rules for the retention of its records, for the administration of its records, for giving its records to the public electronically. I mean, that's the constitutional prong or piece to this, isn't it?
Well, respectfully, Your Honor, I'd say that it's done that under its authority provided by the statute. If you look, and these only kind of came to my attention after we had already briefed this, if you look at the judiciary's record retention policies, the orders enacting those policies cite HRS 602-55. They don't cite any constitutional provision as the authority to make those decisions. I don't see anything in the state constitution that says that the judiciary has the power to make all decisions as to what to do with its records. The two provisions we were pointed to and asked to brief.
Wouldn't it be within the constitutional power to promulgate rules and regulations in all civil and criminal cases for all courts relating to process, practice, procedure, and appeals? Wouldn't retention of records fall within that authority under Article 6, Section 7?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think that that relates to, as it indicates, procedural rules, right? The rules of civil procedure, rules of appellate procedure. But this statute grants individuals a substantive right to have their substantive statutory right to have
their... Is it a right or an privacy interest?
I think it's a statutory right, just like a statute could, you know, grant a member of the public the right to request any other kind of relief from the government that it's then required to provide to them. I'll spend a second or two on the logic prong as well. I think, again, it's important to be clear about what we're looking for. The question there is whether public access plays a significant positive role in the functioning of the particular system in question. Now, we're not disputing that there's some societal benefit to having access to the records of closed cases, but we would dispute that it's a significant societal benefit. As I understand it, I think Mr. Gruby is arguing that the interest that the public has in accessing old court records is exactly the same as the interest they have in accessing the records of ongoing cases. But I think if you go through the list of six societal interests that this court identified and on, all of them are diminished, and some of them are severely diminished after a trial ends. A full half of those interests, the last three, all relate to the conduct of parties during a trial or during a court proceeding. You know, for example, discouraging perjury. I think there's a wide difference between the effect that having an open court proceeding where anyone can come in and listen to a witness testify, the effect that that has on discouraging perjury versus the effect that it has for that witness to know, by the way, after this case ends, you know, there'll be some records sitting somewhere that someone might be able to go and look at.
But what if information comes out after the trial that indicates there was perjured testimony? I mean, doesn't that interest still exist?
Yeah, we're not denying that there's some societal interest. We just don't think it amounts to the significant positive role that the logic prong asks us to look for. I think I also wanted to very briefly just discuss what some of the consequences of recognizing a public right of access would be. Of course, I think it would undermine the intent of this statute. I think it would make it difficult for the legislature to enact any similar statute. And if I could just eat into my rebuttal time a little bit. I think also, as Justice Ginoza noted, that the statute's going to be amended just 2 weeks from now. And I think it would undermine the entire scheme that the legislature has set up. Again, this wasn't in the brief, but this is a fact that I learned while preparing for this case. The Hawaii Criminal Justice Data Center is expecting that there's going to be about 780 expungement orders transmitted to the judiciary every year. That's about 15 a week. And so if that requires the full kind of procedural mechanism that Mr. Gruby's advocating for, not only is that going to create a tremendous burden on the courts, but it's also going to mean that hundreds of people are going to have the substantive right that the legislature intended to give them either delayed because it has to go through this whole procedure, and in some cases, if it's imposing a discretionary standard, the relief is going to be denied. And this, again, is going to affect potentially hundreds of people every year. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Hughes. Mr. Black.
Good afternoon, Chief Justice, members of the court. May it please the court. Mr. Gruby's position is straightforward. Or means or here. We have a statute that says seal or otherwise remove. We can talk in the abstract about whether mandatory indiscriminate sealing of criminal cases by statute violates the First Amendment or encroaches on the judiciary's power. But those discussions are academic because the expungement provision does not require that courts mindlessly seal all qualifying records without regard for established procedures on sealing and those standards. The legislature did not require removal of all public access to these cases. By its plain language, the expungement provision provides an alternative to sealing criminal cases. That alternative, removal from e-court kokua, does not require that courts seal any records or abandon the sealing standards or procedures. I'll walk through the plain language and then address some of the amici's concerns. Turning to the language or otherwise remove. Sealing is not the only option that the legislature provided in the expungement provision. Courts are directed to seal or otherwise remove. This court must give effect to all the words in the statute. The legislature could have written a statute to say seal all judiciary files, as the amici would have it read, but they didn't do that. They also could have written the statute to require removal of all public access to the files. That was the proposal that was put forward by the Penal Code Review Committee, but the legislature didn't do that either. Nothing in the legislative history indicates that the legislature intended indiscriminate sealing as the only option in every case. The plain language of the statute contemplates that something short of sealing is acceptable. Turning next to the language, publicly accessible electronic databases. Now, none of the council, although I may have understood the public defender's office to be making this argument, but I didn't think in the brief that anyone was making the argument that this statute extends beyond ICOR COCUA. I would say Mr. Rogan's motion definitely requests something more than removal from ICOR COCUA. And I just want to pause to briefly reinforce why this case is the expungement provision is only about ICOR COCUA. Now, the judiciary clearly has other publicly accessible electronic databases, including the opinions database that includes Gruby versus Trader and State versus Rogan. But it would be absurd to interpret the statute to extend to that precedent database, because that's erasing precedent. Such action contradicts the entire foundation of common law jurisprudence. And if the legislature intended that, it certainly should have been clearer. There's nothing in the legislative history that indicates that the legislature thought that it was extending the expungement to anything more than ICOR COCUA. Turning next to the language pertain, there seems to be agreement with respect to that. It means relate directly to, albeit disagreement about how it applies to Mr. Ahn's request. In the end, I'm not sure that it really matters, because unless this court were to decide this case within the next 2 weeks, as of July 1, there would be no duty of this court to expunge anything related to Mr. Ahn, because he has a co-defendant in that case. But I would just point out that the mandamus petition was related to Tiffany Masunaga's guilty plea. It was not related to anything related to Mr. Ahn. He's only mentioned briefly in passing because he's a co-defendant. It didn't resolve or address anything related to Mr. Ahn, and he didn't even respond to the petition.
I'm sorry, did I hear you say that as of July 1st, it wouldn't apply if there's a co-defendant?
Correct. So Act 3, as it was signed by the governor, says that there's no duty of the courts to expunge if the expungement only extends to one of multiple defendants in a co-defendant case. In the end, there's no indicia that of legislative intent to extend the expungement provision to a mandamus petition such as Gruby versus Trader. The expungement provision does not reduce judges to ministerial clerks who must, without exception, common sense, or thought, seal court records in criminal cases. The legislature clearly intended or means or, and on that basis alone, the interpretation put forward by the amici fails. There's no reason for this court to even address the constitutional concerns. Turning to the constitutional issues raised by the amici, recognizing that their analysis, their interpretation would not survive the constitutional scrutiny if it were a mandatory sealing interpretation, their argument is that the First Amendment and Article 1, Section 4 of the Hawaii Constitution simply don't apply here. The only supporting authority for that argument are two decisions from the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial Court. And the Massachusetts court only reached that conclusion by blatantly flouting the federal First Circuit's determination that the very same law was unconstitutional. Massachusetts stands alone and is simply wrong for the reasons outlined by the federal court. Criminal cases don't just disappear because a criminal defendant was found not guilty. We have centuries of case records that prove that point. Expungement of criminal cases has existed in Hawaii for less than a decade, and that doesn't create a tradition of secrecy compared to centuries of public access. experience and logic support public access to criminal cases, and the analysis is not different for closed or expunged cases. In the end, if there's any hesitation by this court as to what the constitutional application would be, that must guide this court to reject the amici's interpretation that requires indiscriminate sealing of court records.
So what is your practical approach, having heard, it's not in the record, but having heard that the court judiciary may get 700 expungement notices per year? What is the practical approach that you suggest?
I think what the legislature set forth was that it's removal from ikor kokua. And I think the what we've put forward are two different ways that that can be done, whether it's disassociation. I guess it would be a very technical question as to what works best. But disassociation would be one way. Deleting the case entirely from ikor kokua would be another way. Access would still be available in paper records at the clerk's office. But that would address the concern that the legislature identified. And all along, the legislature has been very practical about this. Even when you go back to their talking about arrest records, they still were talking about, we recognize that it would not be practical to remove all access to all references to criminal history.
So going to what we were talking about earlier, the intent of the legislature really reaching really just those electronic databases, you've identified specifically eCourt Kokua. You know, one of the things I heard you say, which I thought was pertinent, is that the recommendation in the 2015 Penal Code Review Committee's report is different. It's actually quite different than what the legislature actually adopted with regards to this particular issue. And so, you know, I'm not sure that the comments there really are relevant in terms of how we interpret what the legislature actually adopted.
Yeah.
So you could elaborate on that.
I think that's right. I think even the Penal Code Review Committee, I'm not sure they went into a whole lot of detail about what the concerns were, but when you look at what the legislature has said, especially in the more recent amendments that are going to take effect on July 1, their focus is similar to what was referenced in the Penal Code Review, which is you have people that are amateur sleuthing, say, on electronic databases, and they're using that information to discriminate against people because of their criminal history. And removing the ability to search ikor kokua addresses that concern. It addresses the concern that the legislature thought was, as a pragmatic matter, the most troubling aspect, and directly addresses it and what the bare minimum was that the legislature thought. And we're not saying, Mr. Gruby's not saying that you couldn't seal the records. It's not as though that the sealing aspect is just read out of the statute. It's just a question of, if you're going to seal, you have to follow the standards that are set forth in Gruby versus Trader and Oahu Publications versus On. And assuming that the legislature, as we must, knows what the law is, it would have known that sealing requires certain standards, because Oahu Publications versus On was adopted in 2014.
And just to be clear, when you say seal, you mean seal the entire case electronically as well as those records that are in the courthouse?
Yes, as the public defender said, sealing is, I think, is a very clear legal term.
Right.
The legislature would have known what that meant, and it means removing all public access.
Mr. Black, what's the, under your interpretation, what's the obligation of the judiciary to maintain records at the courthouse which would enable someone to search by name? Or is there any obligation at all?
I think that obligation would still exist, and that the ability to go to the courthouse and ask for access to a particular person's files, even if they have been removed from the publicly accessible electronic databases, you would still be able to go to the courthouse and ask for access to those files.
Okay, so the judiciary would have to maintain some, under your approach, or what you believe the legislature's approach to have been, would have to retain the ability to identify those files by name.
Yes. So I think the removal is only for the publicly accessible. So we're talking eCore Kokua, not gyms, for example. And so the ability to go down and ask the court, just as you could have done several decades ago before it was available online, you would be able to go down to the court and ask for access to a particular file.
Well, it's very different from asking for every file relating to a particular name. In other words, it's one thing to say, yes, you can get the file for case number, whatever that case number may be. It's another thing to say, I want any file relating to John Doe. And you think there's an obligation to make available any file relating to John Doe? Is that implicit, or where do you get that obligation from?
I don't think that if it's not sealed, I don't think that anything has changed with respect to the ability to access that information at the courthouse, which would include the ability to ask for a search by name.
All right.
Do you think that the judiciary is obligated to seal or otherwise remove from its publicly accessible electronic databases upon receipt of the expungement order, or is there any situation in which a judge could say, no, the public interest in this is just too great that I'm not going to even seal the electronic documents at this time? I was just thinking, you know, maybe like a sitting judge is charged with a crime which has, and there's a lot of public attention on it, and the judge gets a deferred acceptance. But there's still a lot of public interest in what's going on.
I think that the court has, so I think the bare minimum that the court could consider under the statute as intended would be that it would be removal, and removal itself would be sufficient. And the presiding judge would not need to seal if they didn't want to. But at the same time, I think that the court has, contrary to the amici's position, I would say that the court has inherent authority over its court records to ultimately decide whether or not they agree with something like the expungement provision that would dictate what happens and how that happens with respect to court records. And if you look at cases like the Florida Supreme Court in Johnson and in DHW, they make very clear that when you're talking about messing around with what happens to court records, that is purely a judicial function. And I don't think that is simply limited to the statutory provisions, or it's limited to the rulemaking authority. It's fundamental to the exercise of judicial power itself that if the court does not have control over its own records, it doesn't have the ability to decide cases and to deal with its own cases.
And an opinion is a record, isn't it? It's probably the last part of a case.
Yes, and I don't think that you can, fundamentally, an opinion is the law. And even if this court, I think it's particularly problematic if this court were to remove State versus Rogan and Gruby versus Trader from its opinions page, because then it just is making the law harder to find. It would be like removing a statute from the Capitol's website. It doesn't make sense, because it is still law, it is still precedent, it still can be cited.
And if we followed the public defender's position that everything had to be sealed and or basically gone, we wouldn't even know if someone had a prior dagger dank that made them ineligible for a subsequent dagger dank.
That's correct. And really, I don't think that if you look at what the legislature did, that was not their intent. There was never this intent to seek out all possible forms of criminal history and remove them from public access. They were very targeted, very specific. And even as we see in Act 3 that was passed this year, even people who clearly qualify are not going to get removal. So that was because of the burden and the impracticality of doing it in co-defendant cases.
Mr. Bach.
So I understood your position to be that the state, considering that the state does have a compelling interest in the closure of the files for individuals who have been arrested but never convicted, is that correct?
Yes, I would recognize that.
As a general matter?
Yes.
So the, if I understand your position, the real issue on your side is the alternative. There is a less restrictive alternative to complete sealing or closure. And then, if that's correct, I guess my question is, if I understood what you're saying, it's just a removal. The least restrictive method would be to remove the case from eKokokoi. You can't just punch in somebody's name and see the whole case file. But someone who walked into the courthouse and say, I'd like to see that whole case file, they should be entitled to see the whole case file. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. So the people with the wherewithal, an employer who wants to hire somebody, say, please go down and check out the court records, can come into the courthouse, see the entire court file. And I guess my question is, how does that alternative protect that compelling interest for that individual defendant?
So I think there's a couple points about that. One is when you're dealing with alternatives and narrow tailoring, you're already in sort of the constitutional realm. So but before we get there, I would just say that the legislative intent was clear that removal from eKokokoi satisfied their concerns. That bare minimum was sufficient. They also provide for the alternative of sealing if it meets the standards, but they are not requiring sealing in every instance. Now, if you're talking about sealing, I think it's a case-by-case determination. It depends on the facts. And what is interesting about these two cases is that in many respects, as it concerns expungement, they're outliers because there are appellate decisions in those cases that detail in Groovy versus Trader, there's very little discussion of Ahn's conduct, but it does detail his criminal history. But in the end, while there may be a compelling interest in providing them the opportunity for a second chance, we're doing the sealing analysis now, right, where you first have a compelling interest and then substantial probability of harm and then narrow tailoring. The substantial probability of harm and the narrow tailoring are problematic when you have a precedent, a case opinion that details at length. The harm is coming from that opinion. It's not coming from the briefs that are essentially recited in the opinion itself. There's nothing about the case file that is particularly harmful. What is potentially harmful and is causing the issues, you can easily Google and get on a case decision. So you don't satisfy the substantial probability of harm. You also don't satisfy the narrow tailoring. That doesn't mean that in some other case, for example, if there were things in the briefs that went far beyond what's recited in the opinion, maybe there would be a basis to redact those things from the briefing, and there you could justify sealing in that instance. Again, I think it would be a case-by-case determination, but that's again, sealing is by the standards identified by this court in Groovy versus Trader and in Oahu Allegations for Song.
Mr. Black, I'm not sure you fully answered the question. I mean, his question sure. Isn't there a very easy workaround for employers, landlords, and the like who still want to get this information? It's going to frustrate the legislature's purpose. It's going to cost folks a little more money. You can't just go on the internet and do it, but you could pay some company, which, you know, undoubtedly will spring up to provide this service for, I don't know, $49.99 or whatever it might be, to go down to the courthouse and check. What's your answer to that?
And that's where I was trying to explain that I think the legislature's answer to that is removal from eKokokoi is sufficient. That addresses their concern. And so I apologize if that doesn't answer the question,
I guess you're saying the legislature made a judgment that, you know, made a balancing, that there's a certain amount of access that they're going to deny and this other type of access, which could still be used for the exact purposes that they're trying to frustrate, which is getting information that can be used against someone who wasn't convicted. They're just going to have to tolerate a certain amount of that. Is it?
I think that's right. I think the legislature, again, they were being practical about this. They're
being pragmatic. Practical in the sense if they didn't, it might be unconstitutional.
And there definitely there is that issue, and there is the issue of again looking at the recent amendments. They're not addressing, as the Attorney General recognized, they're not addressing everything. They're addressing very specific issues. And technology is something new that was happening in this area, and it makes sense that the legislature would be focused on addressing the easier harms that can come from amateur sleuthing and logging into eCore Kokua and doing it that way without getting into the more difficult questions that can come from cutting off complete public access.
Now, the legislature in some areas, juvenile records, for example, family court records, there's several statutes that the legislature has mandated sealing. How does that play into this? In other words, does the legislature have the ability to say, I know your interpretation is they didn't say it in this case, but can they say that? Can we seal everything?
I think the issue of family court, like juvenile delinquency cases, things like that, is something that has not been addressed on a First Amendment or by the Hawaii constitutional right of access. So it has not been addressed in that context, such that that's the experience and logic test. If there were a First Amendment right of access, I think there would be serious questions with respect to the legislature's ability to pass a law like that. But I think it's an unanswered question at this point.
Am I hearing from your view that wouldn't pass the experience and logic test?
I'll just say I'm aware of cases that put forward the argument that there is experience and logic, and those are undecided. So I think it is an open question.
So aside from that one, and I know that's outside what we're talking about here today, but tell me about the logic test here. The Attorney General was, you know, suggesting that, you know, logic, the logic piece to the two-part test didn't support public access. What's your take on that argument?
I think when you look at the various factors that have been identified, the ability to have an informed discussion about cases, similar to Justice McKenna's point about people coming along later and being able to teach cases and the lessons that can be learned from them, the fairness and the perception of fairness, those things, the integrity, the misconduct and bias, those don't go away simply because a case is closed. Ultimately, I don't think that you can say that logic is not satisfied here, but ultimately I think the problem is you don't have a different analysis just because a case is closed. What the U.S. Supreme Court said in Globe newspaper is you look at whether or not there's a trial, not whether or not it's a murder trial or a rape trial. And what the Ninth Circuit said in Miley is you look at the overall category of the proceeding, not the special circumstances related to it. Whether or not a case ends in a not guilty or whether or not it's a deferred acceptance, that's a special circumstance. That's not something about the case proceeding in general. It's very clear that criminal cases are protected by the First Amendment, and you don't have a different analysis because it's closed or it's expunged, if you want to look at it that way. In conclusion, Mr. Groupe respectfully requests that the court interpret the expungement provision consistent with the prior decision in this case. If a court will consider sealing a criminal case, the court must comply with the procedural and substantive standards required by the constitutional rights of access. As an alternative to sealing, or if the sealing standards cannot be met, a court can simply remove the case from eCore Kokua. That's expressly contemplated in the expungement provision.
I was interested in how you ordered that. Wouldn't the simplest disposition to be to interpret the statute as allowing the simply or only requiring the removal from eCore Kokua? I thought I heard you say we go through the whole constitutional analysis before we get there. Perhaps I misunderstood.
No, I don't think that's required. I don't think that's required. I think the court can, as a matter of practice, if it agrees that, again, I think there is an issue with respect to judicial power, but if it agrees with implementing this right in the way that the legislature has laid it out, it can just automatically do the removal. And then if there's some question that comes up, it could address sealing.
Very well. Anything further at this time?
I would just like to thank the court and counsel and staff for accommodating me last week. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Black. Mr. Hughes, your rebuttal.
Thank you. I'm going to try and make three quick points. First, on the issue of sealing or otherwise removing, I think there's maybe some common ground there. Our position is sealing is permitted under the statute. So if a court seals the records in the judiciary's publicly accessible electronic database, it's complying with the language of the statute. Likewise, if it otherwise removes, and it has to actually remove the public's ability to access those records.
Do you agree that if we were just to remove from eCourt Kukua, because sealing, we have said that if you're going to seal a file, a seal a court case, you need to go through the hearing process where you're measuring the constitutional, the compelling government interest as compared to narrowly tailored. You have to have a hearing on that. But do you agree that we could just remove from eCourt Kukua and comply with the statute if we chose to do so?
I agree that, yes, if courts just seal from the publicly accessible electronic databases, eCourt Kukua, I think we would also, and this is somewhat of a minor point, I think we'd say Jeff's counts as a publicly accessible.
What do you mean by seal? I mean remove, right? Because sealing, it would be like all the documents say sealed.
Right. And if the court did that, it would be complying with the statute. But it could remove them in another manner. I think Mr. Gruby's counsel said that they could delete the cases entirely from eCourt Kukua. So I think that is a way you could otherwise remove. I think this is, you know, a slight difference, but if you placed all of the documents on a single docket into in-camera status, I know that's technically slightly different than sealing. I think that also counts as otherwise removing.
But would the public be able to see that then? If it's in camera, it'll show up as in camera, right? On eCourt Kukua, or will it not?
Right, but they wouldn't be able to access the files. I mean, the statute is directed to.
But I understand that one of the concerns is people will go online and see that there is a file, there's a case, and they just can't see what it is. And so that is one of the concerns I understood the legislature was trying to address here.
Right.
They don't want people to be able to go online and say, hey, this person has a case, a criminal case, but I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain point, I don't know exactly what is within the technical capabilities of the judiciary. If it's somehow possible to place like an entire docket into in-camera such that, you know, only a court can see it, and that's, even if that's technically not sealing, I think that would still count as removal. The only thing we really have a problem with is a suggestion like disassociating the person's name, because that doesn't actually remove the records at all. And Mr. Gruby's, you know, briefs even say, like, here's all the other ways that you could still access those files, and here's all the other people that could still search for them. I recognize them over my time. If I could perhaps just have one more point. I wanted to address Justice Adams, your question about family court records and the statutes that control that. I actually think that maybe, you know, in terms of the right of access and the experience and logic, there could be a way to distinguish those. What I'd be more concerned about would be this court saying that the judiciary has some sort of inherent constitutional power over its records, because then I think that actually would call into question all of these longstanding statutes about family court records and adult protective proceedings, because, you know, that's clearly the legislature mandating that the courts keep certain records confidential. Likewise, with all the existing expungement statutes that apply when people actually are convicted. Thank you.
Mr. Hughes, did I hear you raise a concern about the Jeffs system?
Yes. Mr. Gruby says in his CERB position statement that JEFS is not a publicly accessible electronic database. I think we would dispute that. Again, you know, I'm kind of just operating from my own understanding of exactly how the judiciary systems work, and I don't know if it's even possible to distinguish JEFS and eCourt Kakua and JIMS and all that. But I think, you know, in theory, JEFS is intended only for attorneys and self-represented parties to use for official court business. I think in practice, though, it's de facto publicly accessible. I'm not aware of there being any kind of, you know, test to see who's getting access to JEFS accounts, what they're using them for, any kind of enforcement. So I would say, you know, I would say if the court says, okay, we're going to seal these records in eCourt Kakua but leave them available on JEFS, that would just kind of create a huge loophole because any employer, landlord, et cetera, who wants to access someone's files would be able to figure out, oh, I can just create this thing called a JEFS account. That's our only point on that.
Okay. I don't usually do this, but Mr. Black, could you come up and respond to the point about JEFS? Thank you. Mr. Hughes, if you need to rebut anything he says, I'll let you come back up.
Sorry, CJ. JEFS is only for courts and their staff, or for attorneys and their staff to be able to access records in which the attorney is an attorney of record in the case.
Isn't that the system that the public can pay for an annual subscription?
Correct. So there is a subscription process right, where you can get a JEFS account. But that process, when you go to view documents, that takes you to eCourt Kakua. So you are not allowed through a JEFS subscription for documents to be able to access cases that are otherwise sealed or are not accessible to the public. So when you go through the process on a JEFS subscription, you click a document, you get into your page, you click view documents, that takes you to eCourt Kakua. And the only difference is you don't have to pay $3 per document because you have the JEFS subscription.
I see. And eCourt Kakua usually starts with the traffic cases and the district court cases, right? Those are generally what's in eCourt Kakua?
eCourt Kakua has everything. But
it has everything.
Yeah, it has everything, but it is...
it's per page or per document.
Per document.
Very well. Thank you. Anything in rebuttal, Mr. Hughes? All right. Thank you to all of our attorneys for your arguments here today. The court will take this matter under advisement.
Eku iluna, please rise. O ho'oku'u ia mai ne kea aha ho'okolokolo ki ke harahana o komoku aina o Hawaii. This Honorable Supreme Court, State of Hawaii, is now adjourned.